This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
I'm Brianna Morello in for Jesse Kelly. Today we have a real treat for you folks. It's the 4-year anniversary of January 6th, so I'll be speaking with Darren Beatty all about that. Plus, Jim Hansen's joining the show to give us an update on our national security. And Justin Trudeau just announced he is stepping down. I'll give you the details. Plus, Father Calvin Robinson is explaining what's happening right now in the UK regarding the Pakistani grooming gangs. All that and more is on the way.
This announcement of the state of the vote by the President of the Senate shall be deemed a sufficient declaration of the persons elected, President and Vice President of the United States, each for a term beginning on the 20th day of January 2025, and shall be entered together with the list of the votes on the journals of the House and the Senate. Thank you very much.
Happy Patriots Day, America. Today, we celebrate by forcing Kamala Harris to certify her own loss. And I got to be honest with you folks, it was glorious, glorious to watch. But the communist hacks never let a good opportunity go to waste, of course. No, they continue to spew nothing but lies in regards to January 6th. The Department of Injustice, their ringleader, Merrick Garland, used this opportunity today to continue to push false claims in regards to January 6th, saying five officers lost their lives in the line of duty as a result of what happened to them on January 6th. Now, folks, I'm here to tell you, that's not true. Garland is really being very selective with his wording. In fact, he's sitting here and he's not telling you the truth. He's just not. Four Capitol Police officers did die after January 6th, but sadly, they took their own lives. No real word as to why they did just that. And then there's also the officer that they love to tout as if he did die during January 6th. You might recall his name, Officer Brian Sicknick. He died of natural causes. That's according to the real experts, of course, but Garland, he doesn't want you to know that. He just wants to spew his lies and have them go unchecked. He knows damn right if he were to go in front of a DC courtroom, even a DC courtroom, that argument wouldn't hold up. That's why he didn't charge anyone with manslaughter. He charged over 1,000 J6ers with crimes, but not manslaughter. Again, it's because they know it's a lie. We've reached a point where we have to start figuring out how do we save the Americans right now who are currently sitting in prison, though, due to the DOJ's political persecutions. That's where my head is today. And we're hoping that President Trump, according to reports, is actually going to go through with clemency. Now, many speculate whether or not he's going to just do a blanket pardon for all January 6th defendants. We'll see how that goes. But it seems to be extremely divided in all of that. But not on the left. The left hates the idea of pardons. Take a listen.
President-elect Trump says he is going to pardon January 6th rioters. We don't know which ones or how many. In the first hour after he is inaugurated. How do you feel about that?
I think that is a terrible idea.
It's really a strange person who's going to be president of the United States who thinks that it's okay to pardon people who are engaged in an attack.
So it doesn't matter how much or what way he pardons them, these people die in sacrifice and defending our democracy, and to have the president pardon them is an outrage and a desecration to their sacrifice.
My position is those individuals should never be pardoned because their insurrectionist activities is not who we are as a nation.
But I think he's also sending a message that, look, if you commit violence on my behalf, I will pardon you. That's pretty chilling.
Ah, You could never, never let a good opportunity go to waste. Left-wing hacks love to pounce on any opportunity, but they won't call out what they've been participating in the last 4 years, which is lawfare. People like Enrique Atario know exactly what that means. He's been one of the many J6ers who's been sitting in solitary confinement for nearly 4 years. But the difference with Atario, though, is Atario was never there that day. He wasn't at the Capitol on January 6th. But for some reason, he's been sitting in a prison cell for at least 23 hours a day for the last nearly 4 years. He was sentenced to 22 years in prison. Get that, 22 years in prison. For what crime? Crime of wrong thought. The DOJ took text messages from Atario out of context, aired it in front of a liberal DC jury, and then got a conviction. And then when Atario, according to Atario himself, because I spoke with him about this, when Atario met with the DOJ told him that if he lied and said that President Donald Trump worked with him to orchestrate January 6th, he claims that the DOJ was going to cut him a deal that wasn't going to give him much in the way of prison time. Now, Atario knew it was a lie and rejected the DOJ's proposal. And as a result, the DOJ fought back and asked a judge to sentence him to 33 years in prison. Now, the judge didn't give him 33 years. They gave him 22 years instead. But again, it shouldn't have happened in the first place. Earlier today, I broke a story in regards to Enrique Atario. His attorney handed us a letter in regards to President Trump, and he's looking for President Trump to issue Atario a pardon. He details what I just told you, that Atario literally sits in a prison cell by himself for 23 hours a day. That, my friend, is torture. Torture. Organizations like the ACLU, they were well-versed on what solitary confinement does to a person. They've written so many pieces, and they've studied it. They fight for the worst of the worst. When I've reached out to them about the abuse Atario and other January 6th defendants have had to endure, they don't care. They don't get back to us. Yes, I get it. It's the ACLU. But if you're going to pretend to fight for Americans and their constitutional rights, fight for them all. So we're hopeful that President Donald J. Trump will extend his pen to provide Atario and other January 6th defendants with freedom. So now we're just sitting around and waiting to see if that actually does take place. Joining me now to discuss is Darren Beatty of Revolver News. Darren, I want to thank you for joining me. This is right up your alley. You've done incredible coverage on everything J6 related. So it's important that we get your take on this. It's very controversial in regards to January 6th pardons. Many are, you know, kind of saying there should be a blanket pardon given out by President Trump when he does get back into the White House. And then there's others who think he should be a little bit more selective. Where do you stand on this issue? Because it's an important one. It gets a little heated.
Yeah, well, actually, there's a very, very intelligent January 6th defendant who has also done phenomenal research in the area of Fedsurrection and other things called William Pope. And he was actually generous enough to write a guest post detailing all of the possibilities here and had a very interesting idea about how to approach the issue. I think it's interesting. I don't necessarily endorse all of the elements of it, but it's basically give all of the January 6th prisoners relief from day one and then go about a process to adjudicate, get their sentences vacated. It's actually a pardon still implies guilt or could. There's some ambiguity there. And so a lot of people, including this individual, feel like, you know, there shouldn't, pardon isn't even enough. There needs to be some process to kind of correct the fact that there were charges in the first place, that I think is a very interesting and sensible proposal. There are also some mechanisms in there to ensure that the whole Fedsurrection component, the people who may have been actually working as provocateurs and those kinds of things, that there's a mechanism to discover information about that, and also a mechanism to protect against sealed indictments, because there could be a lot of sealed ones that wouldn't necessarily be encompassed in a day one pardon. So there are a lot of interesting things there. It's a long and involved and even in some areas technical article, so I just refer people to that. And so again, I think these ideas are interesting. You know, it's almost like I'm not in that position as a defendant, so it's not even quite my place to say this approach would be better than the other approach. But obviously, my general posture is I think that January 6th was a sham. I think it was not an insurrection. It was a Fedsurrection. I think the people in prison for that are political prisoners and should get relief that they deserve.
Yeah, and we need to hold people who participated in this lawfare against J6ers, against President Trump, accountable. I just kind of want to get your take on it, because a lot of people are floating the idea that Joe Biden on his way out is going to be issuing these preemptive pardons to those who are participants in all of this. Do you think it's going to happen, or do you think that this is all just kind of floating rumors out there and it's just all speculation at this point?
I mean, depends on who. I suppose I wouldn't be surprised if there were some pardons. I would be surprised, frankly, if there were any kind of effort to imprison. You know, I don't expect there to be an effort to imprison Merrick Garland or something like that. I don't think that's going to happen either way. So maybe the pardon is unnecessary. But as to like how many and who, I don't have any special insight into who Biden might pardon before he leaves office.
Yeah. We'll see how that all plays out, because I know it's very controversial as well. I wanted to get your take on this because the FBI, and it's so strange that all of a sudden now it's coming about, but they just released new footage of the pipe bomber, and you've done incredible work at covering just that. They waited nearly 4 years to release this footage, and it would be laughable if it wasn't such an unjust that they've held on to this for so long. So when you're watching this video suddenly get released, do you think there's motive, or do you think as to why they're releasing it now? Is it possibly a distraction, or do you think that they've just held on to it now and they think that this could do us some good?
I think it's two things. I think it's one, it's actually directed at me and Revolver's reporting, because it was us that proved that they had this very angle of footage and they were withholding it. So I think finally they're thinking, oh, we'll release this. And all of a sudden, you know, Revolver News has nothing to say, which is, of course, ridiculous. All it does is make them look worse, because it confirms another dimension of our reporting, which is that the frame rate of the footage has been doctored to make it far more difficult, next to impossible, to identify the person in the video. So there's that. And I also think they do it to falsely convey the impression that this is still a real investigation, where I think the overwhelming totality of evidence, furthermore confirmed in the recently released report by Loudermilk from the House Admin Committee, is that this was a very live and real and active investigation until about May 2021. And then the investigation, for all intents and purposes, died. And I think the most reasonable interpretation for that is that the FBI looked into the case, they found out what actually happened, and they said, holy crap, this is really embarrassing for the government. We're going to drop this right now. Hence, nothing real after May of 2021. And so after all this time, they released this thing to like very faint gesture of saying, oh, we're still looking into this, guys. Give me a break. The investigation was dead by the summer of 2021.
Yeah. And they continue to pretend like it's a real case that's still ongoing. I know that a lot of these corporate media outlets have been floating the, oh, there's a $500,000 reward if you have any details regarding this, but it all just seems bogus and it seems intentional at this point. So it's interesting to see play out. I just don't know, Darren, where we go from here, because the government has deceived us intentionally at this point. And, you know, we're now dealing with other incidences like the New Orleans terrorist attack that recently took place, and the incident involving the Vegas veteran who sadly killed himself in the car, allegedly, and it blew up. The FBI is telling us, hey, please trust us. Please just take our information and don't question it. But it's really hard for Americans at home right now to not question the narrative. How do we, as we get closer and closer to President Trump taking back, though, the White House, how do we kind of take this information handed to us by these federal agencies and dissect it for ourselves and try to figure out how to get to the truth?
Well, I mean, that's a broad question. Let's start specifically with the pipe bomb, because we've been on this for close to, 3.5 years. I think our first piece on this was 3.5 years ago. Basically, our first piece was right around when the FBI dropped the investigation. So it's been a long time. It's completely reshaped the way that the nation thinks about January 6th. We've gotten 95% of the way there. And frankly, I'm not sure there's much more that I can do in my capacity as a journalist. I think the additional 5% is very clear. It's very explicit. It's very easy. That can be handed over to someone like Kash Patel, future FBI director, on a silver platter. And if he has the will and the courage and the inclination, he is in a position to close the gap on that additional 5%. And that will actually bring us the kind of resolution that no one ever expects in cases like this. That is very much a possibility. That is very much a possibility on the horizon. But it's something that future FBI Director Kash Patel will have to be willing to do. And he's going to get a lot of heat for it. This is a very sensitive issue. This is outside of the playpen. Just to give you a sense of the kind of hostility and stakes here, just one case of there was an FBI agent actually who was reading some of our reporting on January 6th at revolver.news and found some of it interesting and shared an article with his colleagues. Simply for that, he had his security clearance revoked and was put on leave. He's since been reinstated. But that's just one example of the severity with which government, the deep state, has treated this reporting. It is a matter of extreme sensitivity because think about it. Think of how much they had vested in the false January 6th narrative. The pretext to weaponize the national security regime against American people, the pretext for much of the lawfare against Trump, the major rhetorical basis for their campaign strategy in 2024, which failed. All of this, and that's why they've been shoving it down our throats for 4 years. So much resources, so much energy, so much money invested in it. And so it's going to require a little bit of courage and you're going to take a little bit of heat. But FBI Director Kash Patel can be a hero if he's willing to take what I can give him on a silver platter and close the gap on that 5% and allow the nation to get the accountability and justice that it deserves.
Absolutely. And we hope Kash Patel does just that. Darren, I want to thank you for joining us today. As always, we appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Speaking of pipe bombers, we're still getting to the bottom of that New Orleans terrorist attack, and Jim Hansen joining us next to discuss. After stirring up a wave of confusion following the New Orleans terrorist attack, the FBI seems to be giving the illusion that they're transparent with the American people all of a sudden. The agency telling the American people over the weekend that the terrorist attack that did murder, sadly, 14 people on New Year's Day, well, the terrorist himself visited Egypt and Canada back in 2023. He also apparently wore Meta glasses. He did so just weeks prior to the attack, as well as during the attack. But during the attack, apparently, according to the FBI, he did not film the attack. For some reason, our federal government didn't prevent this horrific attack from taking place, and that has many people on edge, and we're all wondering why. Well, I have an idea. Maybe the White House was too busy creating the first ever U.S. national strategy to counter Islamophobia and anti-Arab hate. No, seriously, folks, that's still on the White House's website right now. This took place just less than two weeks before the terrorist attack. The White House decided to dedicate its resources to push this out. And well, one can only wonder, why were they prioritizing just that? But we're also noticing that globally. And so it's not really a surprise that they're trying to focus on those who aren't really happy with Arabs coming into their countries. And so it's quite interesting to see play out. Joining me to discuss, Jim Hansen. He's the president of World Strat Solutions. Jim, I'm excited to have you on today because there's a lot to dive into in regards to this terrorist who committed a horrific act in New Orleans. The FBI, they're kind of pretending to be a little transparent, but I think they're stirring up more controversy and confusion. If you had to just kind of sit back and grade and assess what they've done up to this point in regard to telling the American people what actually took place that day, what would you give them?
Exactly what they gave the American people, nothing of substance. You know, they have spent their time trying to gloss over this. They initially, the first chance they had to speak to the American people about this, they bold-faced lied to us and said it wasn't a terrorist attack while they had in their hands an ISIS Shahada flag. So I don't think they've done anything except try to cover this up. And the investigation, to the extent they're conducting it, does not seem to be in the interest of finding whether this guy was connected to other organizations. It seems to be in covering up any connections to other organizations.
Yeah, I think that's the part that's deeply concerning. I know the White House was focused on fighting back against Arab hate and Islamophobia. And that could also, I think, be a reason why they weren't trying to be transparent originally when they did their first press conference and one of their own came out and said that this doesn't have any ties or doesn't have, they don't think it has anything to do with the terrorist event. Knowing, like you just said, there was an ISIS flag in this individual's car. So it's pretty concerning, I'd say, that they are hiding that from the American people. Then a couple of minutes later had to issue a statement on Twitter kind of debunking what their own agent told us. But it's not really surprising. I think they're masters at creating confusion. But I want to talk to you about something that I found to be interesting. Yesterday, the FBI telling us that the terrorist traveled to Egypt back in 2023. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the region, I want to take a look at the map because it's very close to Libya. And this had me deeply concerned when I heard this because he spent, you know, a couple of weeks in Egypt. We don't know if he ever crossed the border or if he just stayed in Egypt. What about this region, Jim, do you think might potentially signal that he could have possibly received some training while he was spending some time in Egypt?
Well, Egypt was the headquarters for the Muslim Brotherhood, the umbrella organization for all of the worst Islamist groups worldwide. Now, they actually got shut down there. I'm not sure they ever left, but their headquarters was shut down and burned. But going there, he was not there to see the pyramids. You know, he was there for other reasons. And I think it's deeply concerning when you've got someone who is obviously espousing, you know, this violent cause. And again, as you mentioned, this report that the Biden administration put out, they're trying to downplay the very danger that this guy brought, whether it was from overseas or whether it was from his own initiative. But it's the same ideology. And I think the idea that we're pretending that that is something we need to worry about, talking about that, at the same time, they're telling us the most dangerous people in the world are white supremacists. They have their entire set of priorities upside down.
Yeah. Yeah, they do, Jim. And that's part that gets me so annoyed because I've repeatedly asked both DHS and the FBI for the statistics regarding what you just cited. They continue to say that domestic terrorism is, there's a threat increase, and they continue to push that narrative, but they won't give you an actual statistic to prove it. They'll just tell you individual cases that they've deemed as those that are showing an increase. And there's no real factual argument behind it. And it goes unchecked by the media, unfortunately. But I wanted to mention something else that I've been trying to look into, and I'm not getting any answers from the FBI, of course. There was the footage that we saw floating around on Twitter of several journalists doing a tour of the terrorist home just 24 hours after the attack, it seemed like. And they somehow were able to gain access into his home in Houston and do a walk around. And they show you a Quran, some Islamic material, a Bible as well, what appears to be a laptop, what appears to be both the warrant possibly and a receipt for the items that were pulled from the house when the FBI was present. So I reached out to the FBI. I wanted some answers on all of this. I asked them specifically, why were they able to clear it within 24 hours? I mean, I've never heard of this ever in my life. And I also asked them why they didn't take critical pieces of information with them, evidence or any of this. The FBI telling me that they cleared the house on Thursday, released it back to the property owner. And then I asked around, and it turns out that the FBI actually might have went back to the house after we asked them about those critical pieces of evidence that they left behind, and they might have actually recovered it. Now, again, the FBI is not telling me whether or not they did go back into that house. I could just confirm with local news reporters that the local Harris County deputies were outside. And then the sheriff, I asked him, and this is very wordy, but the sheriff told me that the FBI is the one handling the case, and he has no comment on it. So that tells me the FBI went back in to get more evidence. What concerns you about a Quran being left behind originally by the FBI, Islamic material being left behind as well, and possibly a laptop left on the desk, and the FBI just doesn't want any part in it?
I'm not going to lie. When I saw that footage, I thought it was fake.
Yeah.
I could not believe in that time frame that any competent law enforcement organization would go ahead and allow a crime scene to be compromised and contaminated. Now, if they went through and looked at stuff, left any of that behind, that's one fail. Allowing, you know, journalists and other people inside, another massive fail. Now, if they go back and they take evidence out of there after they allowed it to be compromised, any of that evidence is contaminated. How do we know that when the cameras were off, that journalist didn't plant something interesting there to make a better story? We don't know. And that's not how competent law enforcement organizations work. And our national security cannot be entrusted to people who are that incompetent. I tell you right now, the broom that Kash Patel is going to use to empty out the FBI cannot be big enough.
Yeah, it can't be at this point. I mean, even just trying to communicate with their people who are in charge of being able to communicate with the media, it's painful because they don't want to give you direct answers. They're dancing around all of this, and it's not what a transparent organization would actually want to achieve. Speaking of transparency, I've got to ask, because that same day, that horrific day when the terrorist attack took place, we also witnessed an explosion outside the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas. Matt Leibsberg is the individual who apparently, according to reports, did take his own life in that explosion. According to the FBI and local PD, he apparently took his own life first, shot himself in the head, and then the explosion did happen. Now, it's really hard to cipher through all of this because, again, the American people don't trust law enforcement, and rightfully so at this point, because they've done so much to lie to us in the past. But we're now seeing images of an email, according to the Sean Ryan show, make its way around. And in the email, it just shows that this individual, Matt, the veteran, he might have been dealing with PTSD, that he's talking about drones, the drones that we saw in New Jersey, and how this might be an issue with China. He also says that he was potentially being followed as well. So when Americans are trying to look at all of this and trying to figure out, is this just somebody struggling with mental health issues, or is this somebody who might have actually been followed by the government and might have been targeted? How should we handle all of this?
With the same skepticism that we have to show everything now, because as you mentioned, we cannot trust anything we're told by the people who we entrust with our safety. So I think, in the end, the simplest answer to this is that a guy whose wife left him, had a new baby, he had a bunch of personal problems, and if that email is legitimate, was paranoid and delusional, took his life in front of the Trump Hotel, and according to what the police found there, say they found, was trying to create a stunt to wake up the American people. So the simplest answer is that's what happened. It's complicated, and some of the surveillance video makes it difficult to see the exact sequence of events. I think he could have detonated the fireworks and the cooking fuel and stuff by releasing fumes into the cab of the vehicle and then clacking off that Desert Eagle, which is a giant muzzle flash producing weapon, and that could have caused the whole explosion. But we don't know. And until they give us some specific information, we're going to have to continue to mistrust what we're being told.
Yeah, and that's the problem with all of this, is we just can't trust it. I wanted to ask you before you go, in regards to, again, the Sean Ryan show, we saw an incredible interview that he did with former CIA targeting officer Sarah Adams, and in it she details how there's Islamic terrorists all around the world who are looking to plot an attack here on U.S. soil and around at our embassies as well. I've spoken with people like Sonia Labosco, who works with the air marshals, and she's been upset because, and rightfully so, they're carrying, they are capable of making these undetectable vests that do explode. And for our audience at home, it makes it very, very uneasy to be traveling during times like this, now that we know, according to Sonia Labosco, that they're not really coordinating any efforts between TSA and the air marshals about these devices. She's made several attempts to reach out. How do we handle this, knowing that, number one, Joe Biden's left us completely vulnerable over these last 4 years? And number two, I mean, how do we travel knowing that this is possibly being missed by our own TSA agents?
I think we hold our breath for the next 2 weeks. Fortunately, Donald Trump's election was certified. He's bringing in with him a wartime cabinet. His first term, the cabinet and the people working for him, I would classify as a peacetime cabinet. Nobody's going in with the slightest illusions this time. Everybody has been told the status quo is not just broken, it's counterproductive and dangerous. So empty out the dead weight, get rid of the policies that are making us less safe, and bring in ones, regardless of the screaming and wailing and gnashing of teeth anybody does, that the American people want. We want our borders closed, we want our enemies scared, and we want the entire homeland of our country secured. And I think we're going to see a lot of that coming in the very short term.
Yep. Well, we need that. We need that right now more than anything. Jim, as always, thank you for your time. We greatly appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
Big news happening all around the world, but specifically our friends up north. I'll bring you the very latest.
I intend to resign as party leader, as prime minister, after the party selects its next leader through a robust, nationwide, competitive process.
What a beautiful announcement. Another pandemic tyrant has fallen. Oh, yes, you love to see it. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau just announced earlier today that he is resigning, stepping down as the Liberal Party leader. Trudeau's leadership started off very promising. He had about a 60% approval rating, and then it quickly collapsed after people realized that he's just a communist and nothing more. It's been quite the ride to sit back and watch. Canadians have been embarrassed, and rightfully so. We in the United States have been as well with our so-called leader. But they've been fed up with hearing things like this.
No, it shouldn't be that way. It wasn't supposed to be that way. We were supposed to be on a steady, if difficult sometimes, march towards progress. And yet, just a few weeks ago, the United States voted for a second time to not elect its first woman president. Everywhere, women's rights and women's progress is under attack, overtly and subtly. But I want you to know that I am, and always will be, a proud feminist. You will always have an ally in me and in my government.
Well, listen here, folks. I'm very proud that the United States of America rejected two female candidates for president because, well, they weren't qualified to be president of the United States. Just like you, Trudeau, you're not qualified to be the prime minister because you're an embarrassment. You're a joke. In fact, you're such a joke that you took an emergency flight to Mar-a-Lago to kiss the ring of President Trump after you made those embarrassing communist comments. And, well, I gotta say, President Trump knew exactly who you were when you stepped through the front door and he dragged you like the little man that you are. Instead, he sat there and told you that if Canada can't survive 25% tariffs, then Canada could just become a state in the United States and you could just become governor. And just like that, it was over for Trudeau. Canadians have been reminding Justin Trudeau that he is, in fact, a weak little man all along the road. Take a listen.
King Trudeau, what gives you the right to continue? What gives you the right to stay in office? You failed Canada. You've ruined our country. You're done. Walk away. You don't have an ounce of your father's integrity. At least he walked in the snow. You've ruined this country. Everyone around you is running from you. They're abandoning you. Chrystia Freeland, Sean Fraser, they've all left you. It's time for you to go. It's time for Canada to have an election. You're not the king.
What about the 40% taxes I'm paying and I don't have a doctor?
The $400 million that we invested in the electric car means you're going to have a job for many,
I think you're only here for another year.
Mr. Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Hi. Please get the out of BC.
Have a wonderful day, ma'am.
Yeah, you suck.
It's beautiful, beautiful music to my ears. The people have spoken. They're done with the globalist agenda. They're done with all these Marxists. You have all failed, whether it's America, Canada, or Europe. We're all fighting back. Your days are numbered. Freedom always wins, and you're about to get that message and learn it the hard way. And we look forward to all of you learning the hard way. Coming up, there's a lot of noise coming from our friends across the pond, and it has to deal with Elon Musk, Pakistanis, and children who have been sexually abused. I'll bring you the details next. Politics in the UK have been kind of crazy these last few days. If you've been looking on X, Elon Musk is getting involved. He's been a critic of how the UK government has handled the crisis that's on its hand regarding children being raped. Now, this has been going on for years. All of a sudden now, people are starting to pay attention to this. The government in the UK has been distancing itself and trying to ignore what's going on in their own country. Islamic migrants, we'll just call them for now, have been sexually assaulting children for years, and their own government has completely ignored the issue and helped cover it up. And those who are critical of any of this are thrown in jail regarding whether you show up to a protest, you post something on Facebook, they throw you in prison in the UK. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer has really been feeling the heat since Elon Musk stepped in, and he had to address his critics publicly earlier today. So let's take a listen.
Politicians, and I mean politicians, who sat in government for many years, are casual about honesty, decency, truth, and the rule of law, calling for inquiries because they want to jump on a bandwagon of the far right, then that affects politics.
Listen, we're talking about children who've been sexually assaulted, okay, by people who should not be in your country in the first place. It's not far right. Just because you don't want children to be sexually assaulted by these animals. You've let them into your country. You let them destroy your country. Now you're afraid to speak up because, well, you're afraid that, number one, you're going to lose your election. And number two, they are violent. We're not talking about people who are peaceful. They know that. That's why in the past, you've seen probably all these BBC reports when they're reporting on protests, and they quickly cut the feed when one of these non-British individuals comes behind them with a weapon. It's happened repeatedly. Folks, this issue has gone unspoken about for years in the UK, and it's finally starting to catch the attention of some very important people, and rightfully so. You're not far right for saying you don't want children to be raped. That's not far right. Joining me now to discuss is Father Calvin Robinson. Father, I want to say thank you for joining me. I'm so thrilled for sexual assault victims in the UK right now, because they're finally getting some attention. People like Sammy Woodhouse, who's been fighting for this her whole life after she was raped at the age of 14, are now getting some national coverage. And so I'm very happy for all of this. But explain to our audience, why all of a sudden is Elon Musk getting involved? And what does this mean for those in the UK?
Yeah, first of all, foremost, I must say thank God for Elon Musk. I don't share his politics. I don't share his worldview, but I do appreciate that he at least agrees with me on certain issues, and free speech is one of them. Without him and without X, we would not be having this conversation. Our politicians in the United Kingdom across the bench, so from the left-wing Labour Party to the so-called centre-right Conservative Party, have brushed this issue under the carpet for so long, and now it's finally getting the time of day. And this is the most important issue. This is about the protection of the most vulnerable in society. And for the clip you just played right there of our Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, for him to stand there today and say, anyone who's addressing this issue is on the far right, is jumping on a far right bandwagon. That is the most evil thing I've heard in a long time. Because first and foremost, it's disingenuous, as if any of his contemporaries would be wanting to jump on a far-right bandwagon. We don't have a single politician in Parliament who is far-right. I would argue there aren't even any far-right people in the United Kingdom, but there is not a single politician that's been elected on a far-right platform. We have the Green Party, Conservatives, Liberal Democrats, Labour. We've even got some Islamists who've been invited into the Houses of Parliament, which is astonishing to me and shouldn't be, even be happening in our country. But beside the matter, there's not a single person who would say, let's jump on a far-right bandwagon. So for him to say that, he's dismissing what is the most important topic of protecting vulnerable young girls. And what we've seen in the UK is time and time again, whenever this issue gets raised, it gets pushed away, swept under the carpet, either deflected or ignored. And this time it won't happen. thanks to Elon Musk, thanks to X, thanks to people like you who are sharing this from abroad, that the conversation will be finally had. And the voices, you're quite right to point out Sammy Woodhouse. There are a number of others. Sammy Smith's another one. There are a number of survivors who I'm friends with. I know people who have been victims and survived these Pakistani Muslim rape gangs, and their story hasn't been told. The police have helped cover it up. The counsellors have helped cover it up. The therapists, the MPs, and the ministers. Every single part of the establishment has either deflected or covered up. So our whole country is pretty much complicit at this point. But thank God once more that we are finally having the conversation. Let's get some justice for these poor girls.
Yeah, and they have waited a very long time, and they shouldn't have, and they do deserve justice. I wanted to ask you, because Elon Musk is going after a lot of politicians in the UK right now. It seemed a little odd for me, but I am no expert on British politics. Nigel Farage, who we know here in this country as the Reform Party leader and has done an incredible job, but he's also calling for him to probably step down at this point, considering he says he doesn't have what it takes to lead. And that was concerning. Now, you know, Nigel has made comments in the past that I guess I would say that don't really sound like he understands the issue when it comes to protecting these children. Let's play a quick clip, and then I want to hear your reaction on the other side of that.
Yeah.
We have a Muslim population in Britain growing by about 75% every 10 years. Right? That's just where we are.
Mm-hmm.
If we politically alienate the whole of Islam, we will lose. We'll lose.
So how does one include
them? We will lose. By 2050, goodness knows what kind of a terrible state we're going to be in.
So that's it sounds like, I always make fun of those rhinos who aren't in America, who want to just teeth the line and they don't want to offend anyone, and so they say things like that. But he's telling you straight up that this is all about preserving votes. What do you make of this?
Nigel Farage has been good on many things. Brexit was one of them. He helped us leave European Union. We wouldn't have done it without him. That's a given. However, that does not mean he's a perfect. None of us are perfect. But he's not a perfect politician. He succumbs to popularity. He wants to be liked. He wants to win. He wants to maintain his position. It's taken him 20 years to get into the Houses of Parliament, and he's not going to give up now. He wants to go further. But that comes at a cost. And right now, that cost is truth, and that cost is patriotism. He is putting himself and his party above the interests of the country. This is what we see from time and time again from many, many politicians across the bench. And we're waiting as Brits. We're waiting for our Trump. We're waiting for a politician who doesn't need the money, doesn't need the esteem and the respect that comes with these positions. We're waiting for a politician that will say, I care about this country, and I'm willing to make sacrifices for this country. And people will be upset with me right now because Farage is all we've got and we've got to get behind him. It's like, no, I will not support someone who is not loyal. I will not support someone who puts himself first. I will not support someone who says things like we need to embrace Islam. And they'll say, no, he didn't say we need to embrace it. He said we need to not alienate it. There's no difference. With Islam, either you reject it or by de facto, you embrace it. And we've seen the results of that. Many liberals over the years have been saying fluffy things like, you know, we can just accept them to do whatever they want. You know, they can live their lives. And no, it impacts us. It impacts the country. And when we see that Pakistani Muslim rape gangs are in Rochdale, Telford, Blackpool, Doncaster, pretty much up and down the United Kingdom, systematically grooming and raping young British girls, the core demographics are Pakistani and Islam. And it's not just down to those demographics. We do see some of it in the United States too, within Muslim communities. It's a difference in the way that they see people that are not part of their faith. And so at some point, we just have to say, look, we're not all about all faiths. We're not about all ideas and all faiths being equal. We know there is one truth. That truth is Jesus Christ. But even if you're not going to commit to being a Christian, you can see that there are some faiths that are detrimental to our way of life. One faith in particular that would throw someone off a roof for being same-sex attracted, that would say a woman is not allowed to leave her house unaccompanied. She's not allowed to drive, not allowed to vote, not allowed to learn. That would groom and systematically abuse young girls of a different faith. That's evil. And so we should be able to say, We don't want that in our nation. And Nigel Farage is supposed to be the right-wing figure in our politics. He's the one that people are looking to say that. And what did he say instead? No, we need to, he pretty much said we need to embrace Islam because he needs the votes. He's seen that that's how Labour get elected. That's how the Conservatives have been elected, by courting votes that essentially are counterproductive to our nation and will bring us down. And so I will not support him. I will not support his party. And I think it's bold that Elon Musk has come out and said there needs to be a new leader of reform. And I think he's absolutely right.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out, because Elon Musk is pressing the heat. And I know that they're going to fight back on this. And of course, so. But I am all on board for Elon Musk bringing attention to it. I don't know why it's happening all of a sudden, but I'm on board for giving these victims a voice. I think it's really important. Father Calvin Robinson, as always, I got to thank you for joining me. It's always a great discussion when you're on board. So thank you.
God bless you. Happy New Year.
You as well. Thank you. We will be right back with a clip you're not going to want to miss in just a few moments. It is time to lighten the mood, and we've got the great soundbite for you to take a listen to.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. All right.
Oh, man. It's not as bad as Kamala Harris, who forgot the Pledge of Allegiance last week. That was pretty, pretty rough. Oh, it's been a great time filling in for Jesse. He'll be back here tomorrow. Have a great evening.